Oh, thank you for inviting me and a team from the National Center for Peace and Conflict Studies to come and attend your important annual conference on for history and social studies teachers. I very much wanted to be with you all in person, but unfortunately I have another meeting in Sydney, and so I'm afraid I have to give you the next best thing, which is a pre-recorded version of what I would have said anyway. But I want to just set out what I consider to be the imperative of peace education for Aotearoa New Zealand, and then I'll leave it in the hands of Elspeth MacDonald and Jim Collins and others to kind of keep on facilitating the discussion with you about this. It seems to me and to those that helped develop the Centre for Peace and Conflict Studies that this is really an imperative and not an optional extra. It's something that we need to really take on board as a major kind of policy consideration for the 21st century. There are very good reasons why it didn't succeed when it was first mooted in the 20th century, and they have more to do with the issues and the paralytic consequences of the old Cold War. But I'm hoping that in the enlightened 21st century, this century of maturity, I will be able to think about putting peace education straight into the curriculum, not as an optional extra, but as a kind of a core component of all the core curriculum. So first of all, I wanted to sort of raise some questions about what is peace education. Peace education empowers learners with the knowledge, skills, attitudes and values necessary to end violence and injustice and promote a culture of peace. And that whole notion of a culture of peace, of course, has a very long lineage, not just within UNESCO, but within all who've been thinking about how do you replace attitudes of violence with attitudes of cooperation and peacefulness. Or as Ian Harris put it in his book on peace education tries to inoculate students against the evil effects of violence by teaching them skills to manage their conflicts non-violently and by motivating them to choose peace when faced with conflict. So this is peace education really is something that lies at the heart of good pedagogy. You can't teach effectively in a disruptive and violent classroom. You can't deal with school bullying unless you have some alternative values. You can't get students to think creatively and out of the box about how to deal with violence unless you've given them some skills and rationales for thinking alternatively. So peace education really is about thinking alternatively to some of the dominant and mainstream ways of thinking, which have created all kinds of mayhem in the 20th century and which we hope will not prevail in the 21st century. There's a long history to this. I mean, to some extent, peace education is something we do sort of spontaneously. It has a long history. Did that slide come up? Most individuals and groups are socialized to be cooperative, empathetic, and compassionate in families as a normal part of socialization. And that establishes sort of a relatively spontaneous basis for community and social continuity. But that focus, that sort of relatively spontaneous focus on cultures of peace and the sources of cooperative behavior, is increasingly challenged by cultures of violence, of competition, of militarism and materialism. It's extremely difficult to tell your child to be peaceable, for example. The toys that you give out at Christmas time are war toys. It's extremely challenging urging your child to be cooperative, empathetic, and compassionate on the one hand, when family and friends are urging you to be kind of competitive and have the killer instinct on the rugby field. And so how do we get this balance right between spontaneous socialization and education that's also aimed at some of the same things? It has a very kind of interesting genealogy, of course. Peace education featured strongly in the work of educationalists like John Dewey, who knew that social progress hinged on peaceable communities and on peaceable individuals, that modernity itself required individuals who were strong and resilient in themselves, who had a strong sense of their own personal integrity, but who could link that integrity to good sort of global citizenship, national and global citizenship. And it was also a big element in the works of theorists like Maria Montessori and Rudolf Steiner, and more recently in the critical theories of educators such as Paulo Freire. All of them realized that that teaching peacefulness by peaceful means in peaceful communities was a critical feature of kind of modern consciousness. That it was this which is likely to give individuals the capacities they needed to begin to address sources of difference and division and potential violence in creative and non-violent fashions. And so I think this is why peace education is an imperative and not an optional extra. It's an essential life skill, really, which needs to be added to all the other life skills which get mainstreamed into the educational curriculum. It is as important to our well-being as knowledge of how to keep ourselves healthy. What could be more important to our well-being than having some sense of how to avoid a violent conflict or how to deal with it in a creative and constructive fashion? So there are two pieces to the peace research field and indeed to peace education, which I want to focus some attention on. We kind of characterize these in what I call positive and negative peace. Negative peace simply means the absence of war or organized violence, or if you're thinking about a classroom environment, the absence of direct violence in the classroom, high levels of respect for each other, an empathetic consciousness, a willingness to be compassionate when others are suffering, and so forth. Positive peace, on the other hand, represents what we think of as institutions and processes and dynamics that promote cooperation, justice, equality, and dialogue. And I want to stress this notion of dialogue, because for educators, this is a particularly important kind of dynamic, really. How do we create a dialogical educational process whereby the teacher and the taught are together involved in a conversation to kind of arrive at some understanding of complexity? And I think this is a really crucial piece of this whole puzzle. What role can schools and tertiary institutions play in this process, I think, is another element in this. And what role can peace educators play in ensuring peaceful pedagogy and a substantive peace content in the curriculum? Now I think that in all of this, you might say, well, isn't this sort of what we're doing with different kinds of curricular activities? And what I want to sort of use is a kind of a hub and spoke metaphor, really. I want to argue that peace education provides a hub for a whole range of different kinds of educations. It provides a hub for discussions about some of the structural and personal prerequisites for peace and justice. And I want to argue that there can be no positive or negative peace and no culture of peace unless individual citizens know how to deal with social, environmental, and sustainability issues, social, economic justice issues, and diversity-related issues. Unless we understand all of these different problematiques and how to deal with them, I think it's very unlikely that we're going to be able to kind of respond creatively to the potentially destructive challenges of the 21st century, a century where we're going to be confronted by 9 billion people by 2030, where we're going to be challenged by diminishing energy supplies, by climate change, which is going to kind of generate all sorts of major disruptions, and by food deficits of a kind we can't imagine at this stage in the 21st century. So let's see what some of the kind of key foci might be within this field then, if we think of peace education as a hub. In relation to social and environmental issues, it seems to me that peace education might focus on futures education. What do we want our children to know about the future that they're moving into? What kinds of skills are they going to need to grapple with that kind of the challenges that I've just mentioned earlier? They need some development education. How do we think about development? I mean, is development simply seen in terms of, you know, more growth, more items to consume, higher and higher standards of living, or should it be seen in terms of choices, in terms of independent, self-actualizing individuals able to make their own decisions? I mean, as Amartya Sen talks about it, development is freedom. And in terms of the environment, there's a real need for us to focus some attention on environmental issues. In relation to issues of bias, stereotyping, discrimination, and violence, peace education wants to focus some attention on sources of inner peace. What gives the individuals in the classroom a kind of a grounded place from which they can learn? I mean, what enables them to be tranquil individuals in the face of a turbulent world? We might also want to think about skills that individuals might get in relation to conflict resolution per se, and there are a number of skill-based programs that are already present in New Zealand institutions, like Cool Schools and Seeds of Empathy and so forth, or Roots of Empathy. But what particular conflict resolution skills do our students need to negotiate relationships with each other, to negotiate relationships with those who are quite distinctively other, that is, people who are not of the same gender, ethnicity, religion? What sort of skills do individuals need in order to help them straddle and kind of connect creatively across that most fundamental of divides, the gender divide? So that would be they would be the sort of foci that I would think of in relation to issues of discrimination and violence. In relation to social justice issues, peace education, I think, might want to focus attention on international global education. What does it mean to be a global citizen, a cosmopolitan, somebody who's able to think about the world as a Chinese might, or an Indian, or a Russian, or a Scandinavian? So what sort of global education do we need to put into the curriculum? And similarly, what kinds of human rights education also play a part in us thinking creatively about justice issues in relation to who's included and who's excluded, who's a top dog and who's a bottom dog, an underdog, and so forth. So in relation to social justice issues, I mean, those are the clusters, I think, that peace education might like to focus some of its attention on. And in relation to diversity-related issues, peace education directs attention to citizenship education. What does it mean to be a good citizen of Aotearoa New Zealand? What does it mean to honour the treaty and the fundamental relationship that lies at the heart of this country? What does it mean to be a good citizen in terms of participation and engagement with some of the major issues that are confronting us? And of course, there should also be attention in this to multicultural and anti-racist education. So if you take these four different kinds of issue areas, it seems to me peace education provides a thread between all of them. Or if you like, my hub-spoke metaphor, it provides the hub for bringing them together, because all of them in some way or other have to do with ending direct and indirect violence. Both at the interpersonal level, in the group and organizational level, at the national, regional, and global levels. And that, I think, is one of the most challenging kinds of foci for the 21st century. So the rationale for all of this is, how do we, I mean, and you know this much better than I, since you're all educators and you're working in history and social studies, how do we educate the next generation to be reality-based optimists, capable of understanding and dealing with threat and fear realistically and peacefully? That's the challenge, it seems to me. And in that, how do we intentionally replace cultures and structures of violence with cultures and structures of non-violence? And I think that, and how do we do this within a curriculum which is already overcrowded, which already has too many demands placed upon you, the professionals, as you try and teach within it, and which has all kinds of slight diversions, like national standards, to take you away from the central task of creating environments within which individuals can flourish and discover themselves while learning something about the world and ways of dealing with that world. So one way we can do that, I think, is through what I call sort of extending boundaries of compassion. And this may seem a sort of a slightly odd thing to bring into a peace education framework, but it's one, I think, which we really have to do as a way of giving us a basis for thinking about why this is an imperative. As you can see from the slide, in an interdependent world, we can no longer afford to have narrow circles of compassion. Who are we willing to recognize? Who are we willing to grieve for? Who are we willing to take into account? Who are we willing to include in our community, whether this be an educational community or a neighborhood community or a nation state? How do we generate sensitive attention to the poor and the homeless and the voiceless? Normally we obituarize the successful, and we don't mourn for the deaths of those who are not our kith and kin or are not of the same status as us. So I think that one way in which we can begin thinking about peace education is to really begin enlarging boundaries of compassion and empathy in order to advance what I call some notion of species identity. So that instead of thinking solely in terms of the individual interest, or the school's interest, or our national interest, we think in terms of the human interest. Instead of thinking in terms of national security, we think in terms of cooperative security and human security. And so it seems to me that at the heart of the pedagogic process really there's something to be engaged with here that is fundamental to almost everything we do. Because I think at the heart of the education process really is a kind of a concern about what does it mean to be human? And how can we be human and not trapped by by the different identities that we play by virtue of our birth, or by virtue of our gender, or by virtue of our ethnicity? And I think that this is one of the big challenges that we kind of confront. One way we do this, of course, is through what John Paul Lederach, in his lovely little book, The Moral Imagination, The Art and Soul of Building Peace, talks about. And he has four components to this, which I think are really instructive for teachers. He argues that the moral imagination requires, quote, the capacity to imagine ourselves in an inclusive and expandable web of relationships, including with those who might wish to harm us or those we fear or fear strong ambivalence. And this seems to me to be really at the heart of a good educational process. Good teaching really does require us to kind of think outside of the box, to think in terms of connections and interconnections, and to think holistically rather than partially, to see patterns and to see differences. And to think in a non-orthodox fashion. Secondly, as you can see from the slide, John Paul talks about the necessity to sustain a problem-solving curiosity that embraces complexity without reliance on dualistic polarity, the either-or decision-making. There's no room in peace education for some sense of, us and you, or I and you, or us and them. Or if you want to go back to that those dark days of George W. Bush, Texas versus the rest, or dividing the world into goodies and the evil ones. If we're going to survive the 21st century, it's really imperative that we are able to embrace complexity, that we're able to embrace ambiguity, and that we avoid simplistic dualisms. And I think that's really at the heart of good social studies, of good history, of good geography, of good mathematics. I mean, it's an activation of what it is to be truly human. What it is to be truly human, in my way of thinking, is having a capacity to explore anything with boldness, with openness, and with a willingness to be surprised by what's discovered. So I think that's a kind of a key feature there. And the third element is what he calls the fundamental belief in and pursuit of the creative act. And this seems to also to me to be, at the heart of good peace education, at the heart of good education, really. How do we ensure that our students and our schools are places of deep creativity? And I know that those of you in the primary sector and the secondary sector, are doing this. It constantly amazes me when I go back into a school nowadays and see how creative things are and then compare them with what things were like when I was at school. We had very dour walls and we weren't encouraged to do much that was very creative. But that whole notion of creating conditions which catalyze creativity is at the heart of peace education, and it's the heart of good pedagogy as well. So how do we ensure that in all of our classes in social studies and history, we are creating the conditions where we don't foreclose on creativity. We don't shut it down. We liberate it. We create the conditions within which it can be liberated so that individuals can explore the world in new and exciting and sometimes even dangerous ways. And fourthly, when you look at the slide here, this whole notion of courage. Courage and acceptance of the risks in peace building. And again, this is something which I think is really at the heart of good education. How do we ensure that our students are courageous in the tasks they take on within the school, in the challenges they're willing to confront, and in their willingness to take some risks in order to lead creative and self-fulfilling lives? Without being crassly essentialist, as I say, I think that women, on balance, are better at these things than men. And it'd be interesting, I can't be with you, but let me take a guess. I imagine that a workshop like this has probably fascinated 90% women and 10% men. Women are much more interested in these issues than men seem to be. And I think that really goes to the heart of some deeply gendered divisions in the world. Men tend to see their security, see their peacefulness, see their role in the world in terms of agentic assertion of self. Whereas women, through conditioning and in all sorts of other ways, understand that their own ability to flourish hinges on the nature of the relationships they have with others. And that's a very important peace-building contribution that women make. But each capacity is really essential to conquering fear and generating peace non-violently. Each requires a pedagogy that makes these responses, second nature. John Paul puts us into a pocket mantra, which you may want to remember. He said, reach out to those you fear, touch the heart of complexity, imagine beyond what's seen, and risk vulnerability one step at a time. And I think that these are pretty good injunctions for those of you who are involved in the hurly-burly of education at the coalface, at the primary, preschool, primary and secondary areas. Each one of those reminders is important in terms of helping you be a good teacher and to convey your content in creative and imaginative ways. And so I'm very sorry that I'm not able to be with you to hear what kind of discussion my brief comments might help catalyze, but you're in the hands of some really wonderful people. Jim Collins is with you, and as you know, he's an educator of great renown who taught peace education at Victoria University for many years in the 80s and 90s. And he can tell you a lot about the history of peace education, how we nearly succeeded in getting it mainstreamed into the curriculum in 1986 and what happened to it. And he also, I'm sure, will be willing to kind of think with you about how to place some bounds over the kind of the macroscopic sweep that I've given you here. Elspeth MacDonald is a research fellow at the centre, and she helped organise the workshop for peace educators last year that we held at the University of Otago. She also has developed a wonderful new website which is bringing lots of resources to bear for students and teachers of social studies, history, and those of you who are in geography, and those who are teaching peace education in different parts of the curriculum already. And she comes from a background on adolescence at risk, and so knows a lot about vulnerability and resilience and student capacities to deal with adverse events. Then we've got Heather DeVere, who's a colleague of mine, who's my director of practice at the University of Otago. Heather's specialty is politics of friendship, but she also works in conflict analysis, conflict resolution, and peace education, and taught some of these things at the AUT. She's particularly interested in how we mainstream treaty issues into the peace education lexicon. And then there's Chris Jones, who's a chemist by background, but who has been working with Dorothy Brown, one of the benefactors of our centre in Auckland, on ways in which these kinds of courses might become mainstreamed into different parts of the curriculum, including the science curriculum. And I'm not sure if he's there or not, but Sed Simpson, who's a human rights educator, may be there to help you catalyse some thinking about the role of human rights education in relation to some of the other things that we have on offer within the curriculum at the moment. So I'm sure you're going to have a really productive and wonderful session together, and once again I apologise for not being with you, but I look forward to hearing the outcomes of your discussion with much interest, and I also hope that you'll be able to give your, if you're interested in these kinds of things and would like to develop it further, that you'll give your names and addresses and email contacts to Elspeth so that she can make sure you're part of this wide and expanding network. I think we're quietly putting together some really interesting ideas at the university level. And next year we'll be offering a course on peace education here at the University of Otago, which we hope people will be able to take in-house, and we may offer it on a distance basis as well. So once again, all the best, and I look forward to hearing the results of your conversations. Thanks.